Hello and welcome back to the Charge Podcast. Today I am with Brett and Jason. Say hi.
Yo, what's up? What's up, team?
First guys on the podcast.
Let's go.
I'm excited. I kind of want to ask you guys some relationship advice. So if we have time, maybe we'll do that.
Okay,
let it rip. But they are both Nike trainers, Barry's Bootcamp instructors, yoga instructors, personal trainers, wellness retreat leaders, and the founders of a company called Live Better. Did I miss anything? I feel like I probably
That's
missed.
Pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah.
You guys do so much, but before talking about your guys' story, I wanted to start off this podcast by you sharing first how we met, because I think, wasn't that the start of when you guys were first kind of figuring out what you wanted Live Better to be?
The first time we met was when we were kind of reconfiguring what we wanted Live Better to be. So at that point,
okay.
It was a mishmash of a ton of different projects, and nothing had really started to scale yet. We hadn't built anything bigger than just like a couple ideas or one workshop here, one workshop there. And actually, in that meeting was basically the first time we really decided that retreats were going to be our thing.
Mm.
And we were sitting in Soho and overheard us yelling, ranting, and raving. That was one of the craziest conversations I think we've ever had. So we met about that. That was kind of right at the point of our sort of strategy conversation about where Live Better was going and where it's gotten to now, I think.
Yeah, I remember you came over to us and you were like, what do you guys do? And we were just literally right before that, we were like, what do we do?
Yeah,
you were like, what? Great. You were like, what do you guys do? And we were like, we're trying to figure that out right now. And then we just exchanged information and it's been a journey since.
That's so much fun. So what is your guys' health and fitness journey? I kind of want to hear from both of you individually about what that was like starting way back when, maybe how you got started in sports, how that evolved, and then how you guys came together and met each other.
Yeah, I'll start. This is Brett. So I've been into fitness ever since I can remember. Really got into it in high school. I was a basketball player in high school and was looking to step up my game. Had a slight shoulder injury in high school and met up with a chiropractor, doctor, personal trainer that's now like my biggest mentor that had seen one of my friends for his torn ACL. And he helped me get back to health after that. We started working out together. This guy is in the National Strength and Fitness Hall of Fame. He is the Bahamas Olympic strength coach. This dude's a general. his name is Doc, Doc Clawson. Everyone calls him Hulk. He's like 60 years old and the strongest human being I know. And so after I got better, he had had this workout group that had been meeting for forever, 20 years. And so we worked out a few days a week together. And I got really into lifting, knew the benefits of it, and gained a lot of muscle mass, got way better at my sport, and was super into health and fitness throughout high school, throughout college. Had started yoga at right around the same time in high school, a couple of days a week, because my mom was very into that, and was kind of seeing both sides of it, and was doing all of it at once. My athletic performance skyrocketed. I saw how important the body was. It was amazing. And then was, you know, the classic, like, meathead, lifting really strong in college, trying to gain weight and look big. So still into health and fitness in college, but definitely went down, and how Jason and I met, went down a rabbit hole with a lot of drinking and doing a lot of that stuff, but in a fun way, never, like, too serious. But still loved working out. So like working out was like my thing. Like when I'd get home in the summers, it was like lift weights, get strong, go back to school, destroy myself, do the same thing in the summer. And then after school was kind of when everything came to a head for me. I had no idea what I wanted to do after school, but knew that I liked to work out. And I have a couple like keen memories of me working out with a couple of my friends and in high school and them being like, you're gonna be a trainer one day, like you're gonna be a personal trainer. And I just like remember one of my buddies, Joe, I was working out with him, and I still remember this. He's like, you're going to be a trainer. But I never thought that was a career. Never thought there was money in it. I didn't think it was an actual job. I grew up with business influence. My mom was a nurse. My dad was in business. I was like, those are the only two professions I ever thought. So I got a business job out of school, and then knew 6 months in, this is not my jam. This is not what I want to do. So I started training at a Gold's Gym in Milwaukee, just training a couple clients, picking up people that were sick, kind of just piecemealing it together, just seeing if it's something I wanted to do. And then knew it was something I wanted to do very quickly. And then after a couple of years in Milwaukee working at a corporate job, came back to Chicago. And then that's when Jason and I met, and we can kind of dive into that later.
Cool. And where did you go to college again?
University of Illinois.
Okay.
Yep.
So you went to Milwaukee just for your job?
Just for my job, yeah. I had a really good job at Kohl's Department Stores, their corporate, was doing data analytics, loved the job, the team, everything up there, but just, and I still use the stuff, like, still use all the knowledge from that, had really good mentors there, but just knew that that environment is not where, like, my passions were, and so that's where that's when I made the move.
Great. mine started similarly. I played soccer my whole life, so anything running related, and I was, just to like build on why I started working out in the first place, I was always super small, and I would just apply extra speed, extra grit, like was the kid throwing elbows and shoulders and just would truck you over at 100 miles an hour, because that was the only way I could make up for being smaller. But pushing my body that hard for that long ended with me getting injured so many times that college kind of dream of playing sports sort of ended. So once I went to college, then it was, all right, now that like injuries have been plaguing me for a little while and I don't have sports necessarily to keep me active, which I loved doing, outside of soccer, any downhill gravity sport, snowboard, surfing, biking, all of that. I love that. I got into lifting. I was like, well, now I have to find some other way to get a little bit bigger. So I got taller and I'm like, I want to gain some weight. So I started lifting, did that thing, got into nutrition kind of at the same time. I was really lucky. I had a roommate who loved to cook. So that kind of got me into food. And then I picked up a copy of 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss. And it was a Tim, now that everybody knows Tim, it's like, oh yeah, I read his books too, but there was a self-discovery thing for me. So I just grabbed it off of a random Barnes & Noble table, like right after it got released without knowing who he was, and just got addicted to self-experimentation. So after that, it was lifting and nutrition and trying different things. I studied accounting at Miami in Ohio. So I came out, got a CPA, started in tax consulting, and that obviously was not awesome. I was working long hours. Our busy seasons were during the summer. I ended up having to travel a lot in the group I was in, and just understanding that that was not making me happy. At the same time, it was causing so much more difficulty to me maintaining my health that I knew something needed to change. So I started kind of thinking about training on the side, because I noticed that most of my free time was spent trying to make myself healthier after spending a serious amount of time on a plane or on a desk, and just in a corporate environment that's not geared towards making you healthy and happy. It's geared towards making you work as hard and long as possible. And just from talking to kind of like friends and family, I started to help plan health for like clients, which is just friends and family at that point. Started training before work, and then once I had the kind of black and white picture of like, well, here's what this feels like in a corporate work, and here's what I feel like when I'm training somebody or talking to somebody about their health, it was pretty easy to like let that accelerate into all of what we do at The Better Now.
Yeah.
So injury kind of like fueled the end, but also the start of me really wanting to like take care of myself and figure that out.
That,
at each of those stages.
I can't believe The 4-Hour Body 2 is one of your first books. Do
yeah.
you...
So the first like health book I really read, but it just addicted me to it because it wasn't... Like, his books are obviously millions of people can like consume his information.
Mm-hmm.
They're just very digestible because that's not his job either. He's just self-experimenting and writing everything down.
Yeah.
And he asks good questions, so you're going to get good answers.
Do you guys listen to his podcast?
Yeah.
Yes, religiously. Yeah.
It's so cute. So my dad, so I shared this with my family, and because I love his podcast as well, and I loved his podcast with Terry Crews. And so I shared it with my dad. I'm like, you should definitely listen to it. Instantly, he's now obsessed with
yeah.
Tim.
It takes one thing.
He bought his book for our work week, and then he tweeted. My dad has a Twitter. He tweeted at Tim, and he's like, Tim, like, you should interview Elizabeth on your podcast.
That works.
I was dying.
That's
I was like,
work.
Dad, you're
That's
just so cute. Like,
That's
oh, gosh. Anyways, So let's talk about how you guys kind of met each other and then what started Live Better.
So we met under very different circumstances than what we preach now. Jason's fiance went to U of I with me, and I was friends with her through a mutual friend. Jason and I also went to rival high schools, but we didn't know each other because we played different sports, but we literally lived probably like a 15-minute drive from each other, but didn't know each other. And so my mutual friend was at a sorority event with Jason's fiance's friend, and so met Jason at the event. I was a bartender in college, slinging drinks at 19. So this is the beginning of our sophomore year. And so my buddy comes into the bar with Emily, Jason's fiance, and Jason's like, hey, this is Jay, like, you should meet him, he's really cool, I've been hanging out with him, give him some free drinks. So of course, as like trying to be cool, I'm like giving Jay free drinks and we're hanging out, having a good night. Ended up just having an awesome time, like, you know, just connected as friends. And then Jason, that was a Friday night. Emily had an exam early in the week, so she stayed in on Saturday, but he's coming all the way from Miami, Ohio. You're not staying in.
No.
So he goes out, and I'm bartending the next night, and he gets there early because he's going to meet some of his friends. So we end up just, like, chatting, and from then on, it was just, like, raging drinking buddies for the next 3.5 years. Like, every single sorority event that she had, that she would find my buddy and I date so that we could hang out with Jay. We visited Miami, Ohio once to hang out with Jay. So it was more just, like, we just became, like, really good friends.
Same amount of energy applied to something very different.
Very different. And we look back at it, and, I mean, obviously it was, like, a phase, and something that we don't hinder on. We're not, like, upset that we went through that. It was fun. We met so many good people, and we had a really good time. And you just, like, learn how to be social, which I think is super important, especially in our line of work. So two and a half years after college, Jason has been grinding as an accountant, and I have been making my way back to Chicago. So I switched jobs to work for Walgreens corporate, which was something that was not my jam at all. And so we actually, funny enough, that same guy that introduced us, his birthday party is in Chicago. And so I see Jason at the bar and I go up to him and, you know, Jay, he's like a nice, bubbly guy. He just, like, looks tired, and, like, normally when we'd see each other, we'd be like, yo, what's up, man? And he's just like, hey, I'm like, dude, what the hell is wrong with you? And he's like, well, I just worked 80 hours this week, and I have to go to the office tomorrow morning. I'm like, what are you doing? And so I was like, dude, I was like, I'm trying to get out of what I'm doing. I was like, I started this, like, protein bar that I'm working on. I was training clients in Milwaukee. We hadn't seen each other probably, like, a year. I don't even know the last time we talked before that. And I was like, let's go to dinner tomorrow and just talk. So we go to Life Kitchen, and we sit down for what we thought would be a dinner and turned into, like, a 5-hour conversation, spitballing ideas about how we, like, wanted to do stuff. And then I literally, like, it was, like, the next day. We just started doing things. Yeah, we just
so
were,
like,
we're going to do this.
When you walked up, when we met the first time, was, like, you were walking up to us sorting out that mess.
Yeah,
you know,
so that,
like,
was
passing the gas.
You probably met us, like, 6 months after that. So it was just, like, ideas, and the thing that keeps us going is that we share the same methodology and the same end, like, viewpoint. We vary in some of our ways of doing things, but it's, like, our dream, and, like, we both came from a similar environment, and we knew what we wanted to do, and I think that's just kind of, like, what drew us together, and now we just mesh and spitball and just, like, go at everything full throttle, so... Yeah.
When did you guys quit your corporate jobs?
3 years ago. 3.5. Well, yeah, 3 years ago, almost a year.
You were 3. I was about 6 or 8 months after you.
Yeah.
So I was about 2.5. And so we were both about 5 years in to working, 4.5 years in to our jobs when we quit.
Yeah, no, 2.5.
Oh, because you were a year after me, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did a year.
I was coming up on finishing my 3rd year.
Yeah, that was
and
a little bit
coming
of my
up on year 3 of the better. That
yeah.
makes sense.
So the overlap was.
The overlap for me was a full 8 months. Basically,
mine was like a year and a half of overlap when we were doing both.
Yeah, yours was a while, but you were getting married.
There's a lot of
things.
Little,
yeah, yeah. A little more to worry about.
Yeah.
I just pulled the chute.
Yeah.
So when did working for Nike, I know you also just went on a trip,
yeah.
to, was that to Nike headquarters?
Yeah.
Definitely want to hear about that, but yeah. Like when did that start coming into place, working with Barry's,
yeah,
yoga
so,
instructors?
Yeah, so I had...
These are all different timelines.
Yeah,
Nike, I guess.
So I had my training certification from Milwaukee and was training. When I met Jason, he wasn't yet certified, but he knew that he wanted to get into that. So right when we started meeting, we were like, okay, let's start to pick up some clients on our own because we want to, one, get the experience, and two, like, learn, is this what we want to do? So we started to get some clients. Jason got certified, and we had a contact that was, they were bringing on trainers for this Nike project. And Jason and I were the least experienced of the crew. We had good energy. Like, people thought we knew what we were doing, and this is the fake it till you make it type
of
thing.
But we also had, like, we had enough experience, like, through sports and training that it wasn't like we were walking into something that
we knew what we were doing. But all the other trainers that were in these meetings had 4, 5, 6, 10 years of experience training, and we didn't. So one of our guys that got us into training sits down in this meeting, brings us along. He's like, I'm working with these guys, I'm bringing them into the scene, like, we should do this. And then, so they just unveil this Nike project, which is like, it was the craziest thing ever. They built a warehouse in the West Loop that was like $1 million, and we had like turf and 4 classes a week, and Jason and I just started going at it. And that was huge for us because that's developed a lot over the last 3 years, and Jason and I have been kind of on like the cusp of it all. We've been pushing the boundaries. We're always trying to do new things. That's why I was over there at the beginning of the week. And Nike's been huge. Barry was hit a little bit over a year ago. So through a Nike connection, Barry's reached out to Jason and I and said, hey, we're coming to Chicago and we want some trainers. We'd love to interview you. They interviewed us. They're like, you guys are crushing it. Let's go out to New York and train. So we had never taken a Barry's class before in our lives. We knew what it was, but not that much. And then we go out and train, and now we're doing that. We're doing Nike. We both picked up yoga certifications along the way. Mine I did when I was in Milwaukee, and Jason, you did yours.
The
core power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, right when you started. 200 hour at core power. I basically got my training cert right after we talked, which was like in August.
Yeah, you just like crushed it in like a month.
Yeah. 4 years ago, I just studied for like 2 weeks. I took the test, and then I enrolled in Core Power's 200 hour because another Nike trainer does a lot of like Core Power management stuff.
Who is that?
Robin Rubicki. She does she runs the Bucktown studio. She's great. She's actually coming on a retreat.
Cool. So, what was it like becoming a Barry's instructor? Did you guys go through? Because I know SoulCycle, for example, they talk about how that process for interviewing is like intense and crazy. Is it similar for becoming a Barry's instructor?
I think it depends on what studio you're going to, but because we didn't have a Barry's studio already in Chicago, they wanted to make it a lot more immersive. So we went to New York for 10 days to train, and then we went to LA for 5 to train.
Mm.
So New York, it started in LA, but New York is like the hotbed for, it's probably the most locations of anywhere else in New York. It's the biggest market. So we took a lot of like the really good instructors. We had to take a class a day. So got a ton of experience with that. You have to get on the mic. It's trial by fire. You just strap the mic on and go. And they give you like little templates and you give a full tryout. And eventually you teach like a pretty serious section of a class. So we got a lot of experience like being in the studio around different instructors that obviously all have different styles. They come from different backgrounds. We brought like a sports performance and like athletic training background to our classes. So if you come in and take a Barry's class of mine or of Brett's, it's going to be programmed really well from start to finish and include like a lot more athletic style movement in it. So I get a lot of clients that like that. They like having like good athletic style kind of treadmill sets too. But we got just kind of indoctrinated from the New York and LA scene where their corporate office is, and then couple months later, open the studio and music on, mic on, let's go.
Strap the Beamer mic on.
Yeah.
Wow. Whether it was yoga or a Nike event or even Barry's, was there a certain time when you were really nervous? Like, what was teaching that first class like?
Absolutely insane. But my first Barry's class was, we opened the weekend before Thanksgiving. So I was gone. I'm always gone on the Thanksgiving week. I taught a Monday evening class, the first Monday back, and the CEO of Barry's, Joey, who's an unbelievable CEO, the nicest human being in the world, but he's the CEO of the company who hired me, comes in and brought a group of like 30 friends in. So the first Barry's class I ever taught had 48 people in it.
Wow.
The room was full. I had come off a 10-day trip, so I'm not in normal training mode every day. It was like, I don't get nervous a lot, but I get anxious about things. Like, I just want to go do it. I don't like waiting around, and it was a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
a
lot.
Oh my gosh.
But fun. I mean, you're just in there, you know, having a good time. It's your music. It's your workout. So you're not spitting anybody else's stuff out, which is nice. So you can be comfortable with what you're saying and what music you're playing, and that helps a lot.
How about you?
I definitely didn't have the CEO in my first class.
Yeah.
I really had like a good experience coming into Barry's. I think for me, I don't really get nervous. I don't really get anxious or nervous, really. I'm just like super excited always, I think. And sometimes for me, that can be my crutch, is that I'm just so hype about things. But I think overall, I think I've just had like very good experiences. We were through doing like the Nike stuff, I think maybe like if you're talking about the most nervous I've ever been, it was probably like one of the first like Nike events, because we were with so many really experienced people. And the clientele was super like athletic and strong, and they knew what they were doing. So I just wanted to make sure that my cues were on point. But it's kind of like 10 minutes in, you just get into a zone and you just crush it. So I've always just felt really good.
That's
yeah.
Amazing. I love what you're talking about with working for Nike and just kind of faking it until you make it. Did I ever tell you guys about how I was invited to that Nike master training?
No,
retreat
no.
at Nike headquarters.
No,
this was
no.
like 3 years ago, because we were working with Nike a little bit with Charge, and I think my name was just for some reason lumped into the group of being Nike trainers. And I was like, well, like, of course, yeah, I'm gonna go. So I go, because I didn't really realize exactly what it was. It was literally all Nike master trainers. And I wasn't even a personal trainer at the time.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, that's how I met Bettina and Kate and everyone like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so cool, but also like so scary kind of too. But it was definitely an experience.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to take those opportunities, you
For
know?
Sure. Yeah, it was nice because we basically walked into it and just said, hey, we're new and we love doing this. And I will come from a background to be like, if you just let me learn, like, that's all we want. We're
mm-hmm.
just humble. Give us anything that, or anything we can shadow, anything we can learn from, and we're going to do it. And we'll stay up all night for weeks on end until it's good.
Yep.
And Brett and I's like good combination of just being willing to learn and being like willing to be new, and then willing to put in the work on the back end helps accelerate it, because when everyone else is going home and watching TV and chilling, it's not usually that.
Yeah. What is your best piece of advice for trainers or want to be trainers in terms of course, like, putting in the work, you need to do that, but do you have any resources that helped you kind of become the trainer that you are today?
Yeah, mentors. Being on the, you can get as many certifications as you want, but unless you plan on writing a textbook,
mm-hmm.
just being able to sit at a computer and learn something, you can regurgitate the information, but until you get a live human being in front of you, it's a whole new ballgame. So there's kind of a dual piece to that. You want to be educated and you want to have the information, but you need the hands-on experience. And that's what we got a lot of really fast from really good people. So there is no shortcut to putting in the work in person, because then you learn the other piece to this is you could be the most knowledgeable person in the world, but that doesn't make you a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
Because being able to spit that information back to somebody to have them understand it the way that they need to, they might have injuries, they might have mental setbacks, they might have mental barriers. People have different levels of motivation and discipline, and those are also things that you have to assess. So that's, we're not even to the like the really physical things yet. This is just getting to square one.
Mm-hmm.
The physical things, the more you do it, the more you start to recognize patterns, the more you say, oh, I get that when I learn this from this, my like personal training certification, this also ties into when I was in this yoga alignment workshop, and that ties into when I was doing this mobility work on a foam roller. Like,
mm-hmm.
those patterns start to connect when you get more experience. So I would say just find a good training mentor at a like reputable gym, and it doesn't take too many questions or degrees of separation to find one of those,
mm-hmm.
and then just offer to work for free, offer to be in there.
Yeah.
That's always my advice. Like, go find a person to give you the experience.
Who either was your mentor, or if that person currently is your mentor now, who are those people?
Yeah, Jason Rayner for sure. So Jason, who might have been on that trip if it wasn't all women, is a Nike master trainer in Chicago. At the time, he was doing all the programming for the warehouse that we did. He was training out of the Hi-Fi personal training gym in Chicago, but now does a lot of work at the JW Marriott in Chicago and building out some of Marriott's fitness offerings. And Jason is a wealth of information. So he's got sports performance background. A lot of his clients now are like CEO and executive level. So you get the corporate side of things, which Brett and I have been able to lend a hand to because we've sat in a seat. We come from exercise science backgrounds. So we almost have the like kind of beginner's mind thing where we have the personal experience with being the client, and now we're on the other side of the table. Jason is really good at relaying that information. He's very intelligent. He's very good at like body assessment and movement first, not just like how do we pack on slabs of muscle or, you know, the kind of the stereotypical like just walk into the gym and do curls. He indoctrinated us with the overall Nike programming, and then we kind of just shadowed him for individual clients. I've trained some of Jason's clients when he's been away in the past, and just to like watch him work and speak to somebody in the way he puts a program together, like that is priceless to us for sure.
Yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
I want to meet him. So is he still in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Is there anyone else?
For me, I mean, the guy that's been my mentor my whole life, Doc. Yeah, he taught me how to lift. He taught me how to stand up straight. he taught me about performance. I mean, he trains at the Olympic level, so he's got it all. And one of the coolest things about him, and it was very similar to Jason Rayner, is just that they're willing to teach. So you find these people that this is their passion. And you know right away if someone's like willing to teach or if you're like feel like you're nagging them.
Mm-hmm.
So Doc, every year for the last, I think this was like the 25th year, he's had a Thanksgiving morning workout, and I've gone since I was in high school every single year except once, and he gets like 60 people to come to this event. It's insane. And it's just because he's willing to like spread his knowledge and wealth, and all the workouts I ever did with him didn't pay him a dollar. He would just show up, he'd write super good programs for like 15 of my friends and I, and we'd go to the gym. He would just hand us the program, watch us work out. He'd be working out too. And it was all just because of how much he like cared about people. And it was like, when you find people like that, you're like, this is something that's like meaningful. And his education is incredible. So just seeing people like that. And Jason was the same way. He trained us. We'd go in Hi-Fi in the basement. He would like show us mobility stuff for the first time, like on his own, like late nights, he's got kids, like, and he just did it. And those type of people are like, those are the people that, you know, you have to be in debt to because they've done stuff for you for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, mentors really are so, so, so important. But besides mentors, what are some other health and fitness resources that you guys utilize? So whether that's a podcast that you like or books or other people that you follow that you may not necessarily know in person, what does that look like for each of you?
I definitely have some Instagram people that I really like to follow. Primal Soldier is my kettlebell guy. JTM Fit, who we had on our podcast, is like functional strength to the max. Move You is a like really body aware, like mobility and posture and like reducing back pain and all sorts of stuff, and they're just hilarious. I like pull so much from that. So I had a shoulder injury a little bit ago, and coming back from that, I was like utilizing all these different resources. So Instagram is big, and I think the way that Jason and I use like social media, it's just a tool. We like align ourselves with a toolkit. So I don't really follow people on there just because I like their pictures, but I follow people like, can I gain something from you?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jacob Harden, who we had on our podcast, super good page, like very well laid out. If you have like a hip issue, you can just like scroll down his page and it shows like all hip work. So I like to use that right now. And then there's definitely been like For Our Bodies, a really good book that Jason mentioned earlier.
Gymnastics Bodies.
Cool. Is so Tim interviewed
Coach Sommer. He's a former USA gymnast coach for a long time, but they created an online gymnastics program for adults. So they've taken 52-year-old sedentary males and gone from like can't touch your kneecaps to full press to handstand in 2 years.
What?
And they back off the notion that like you can't fix something that is that old. Like you can't, but it takes an extreme level of work, and they have the proof to do it. And it's just
and
a very
that
well
program.
Laid out.
Yeah,
they have an amazing stretch program. They go through kind of fundamental gymnastics movements that are incredible. Online tutorials, like
whoa,
to answer your question about where we go for information, Instagram now, when video came out, was great, but they all just funnel into things, and people are bringing things online. So, I mean, you can take the top yoga teachers in the world now off of like Kodi app,
mm-hmm,
or an online presence from video. You can get a full gymnastics program from MuVu. You can get a full mobility program to solve all types of pain. So there are an infinite number of resources, and you start to see the same coaches kind of coming up. There's a lot of resources in the Nike network. Love Onnit. Primal Soldier, the guy who Brett talked about kettlebells, comes from Onnit. And they have a really cool gym down in Austin, and a great kind of holistic brand that really aligns well with Live Better. Their tagline is total human optimization. So get
yeah,
from them too.
Do you guys listen to Aubrey Marcus a lot?
Yeah, Aubrey's great.
Yeah. What is your favorite Onnit supplement? Or anything that they, I don't exactly know what they have.
I use more of the fitness tools, so I've got a ton of the kettlebells that are shaped like monkeys. I've got battle rope. I love all of that, because that's the type of training that really blends strength, movement, and mobility kind of all together, if you could separate the three of those. As in, we just want to move the body in all directions at all times, do the full range, and do it with some strength. And we plug in like a little yoga, a little mobility stuff. But I like their tools, I think,
yeah,
probably
same,
more than I take any of the supplements.
Yeah. Cool. Well, their steel mace, their Indian clubs. Like, I use all that, like, unconventional
Wait,
style.
Wait, what? Indian club?
Indian club looks like essentially like a bowling
pin. It's a bowling pin.
It's a bowling pin. It's like weighted. And I use it a lot for shoulder stability work after
okay,
my injury, and it's been incredible. They have like really cool tools.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I'll have to look at that. Going back to Live Better, what is your guys' ultimate mission?
So our mission and our motto is to use health and wellness as the sustainable fuel to do whatever it is you want to do better. Whether that's you want to start a new job, you want to be a better parent, you want to just be able to work out harder, or you want to just be healthier. It doesn't matter what your goal is. There's no denying that if you're healthier, you'll do it better. And so we want to empower people with legitimate tools to do that. Not just hype them up, although that's part of it, but give them a kit of being like, for you, you need to do this and you will become better. And then once they get on that path, it's essentially a continual upgrade methodology. Wherever you're at today, there's no doubt tomorrow you can get better, and there's no doubt that the next day you can get better. And our whole tagline is have the best day ever every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And we wholeheartedly believe that every human in the world can do that,
mm-hmm,
regardless of condition, regardless of where you live. And if you're using health and wellness and that's your focus to better yourself, you will better everyone around you.
Yeah, I remember at the retreat you guys were talking about what the best day ever meant. Can you guys go into detail on that?
I just think that it's a nice sort of framework to take, that no matter what happens in your life, you have the rest of the day to make it better. So we don't want to come off as like Mr. Positive nice guys about everything. Like, it isn't fluff. It's for real that no matter what happens, like, it's your fault if you don't decide that after that the day can get better. Like, you are not incapable of going to do something to make yourself even marginally happier than you were. So it's just more of a framework, like something bad happens and Brett just goes, best ever. Now we just fix it. We just go out and do it and just change course. The day that I recently ripped my hamstring off the bone, arguably not the best day ever, but after I went home, I laid down, I read 4 chapters out of my book. I was like, this is great. I just had a like nice kind of relaxing evening. Obviously it didn't feel 100%, but I could have just like, you know, sulked around and taken it off the chin and just sort of laid there and felt sorry for myself. But you just decide that there are other things you could be focusing on than something that's holding you back. So we use it as sort of the framework that is more discipline, I think, than motivation. It's discipline to say, it's on me, let's go change it. Because no one else is going to take responsibility for your own health. If you've got something that needs to be fixed, it's on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's more about you taking actionable steps to have the best day ever. It's impossible to just wake up and do it. You need to decide. You wake up, you walk out the door, and it's your day. Nobody is forcing you to do anything. You do everything you want to do you do everything you do every day, and it's your choice. And sometimes we lose sight of that because there's external pressures of money, of your job, of your relationships. But if you take a step back and just think, what did I do today? Did I do it, or did somebody literally drag me to do it? And the answer is always, you went and did it. It's like, oh, I had to stay late at work today. No, you didn't. You could have walked out the door at 2 p.m. It was your choice to stay there. But it doesn't feel like that because there's so much pressure. And it's the same thing with that attitude. It's, if you want today to be the best day of your life, it will be. No, there's no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have a framework that you use to have the best day ever, whether that's a morning routine or any other daily practices that you use?
I think for me personally, I definitely have a couple routines that I use. But for more than anything, and I definitely had a couple more routines when I was working in the corporate environment because my schedule was more structured. And I used kind of routine to almost be able to break out of the daily grind and routine. But now for me, it's just a mindfulness mindset. Every day, every single day, no matter how I do it, I spend time in my head. I use yoga a lot for that. I kind of call that like my moving meditation. But if a day I don't practice yoga, I'm meditating at some point throughout the day. And normally it's before I go to sleep. I have one of those like porcupine mats that I lay on the ground and put my feet up over my bed. And I do it every night, and every night my wife's like, oh, here, laying down on that mat again. But I do it every single night. And for me, it's creating a framework and a structure, but having the chaos in the middle for me is super important. I need time to do other things, but I think just every day, if there's one thing that's consistent, it's having some mindfulness thought to assess where I'm at and where I want to be.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what is that porcupine mat?
Like an acupuncture mat.
I was going to say, it's acupuncture. Okay.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's acupressure is what they call it. And I get into everything. I'll try every weird health and wellness, superfood, whatever it is. If somebody tells me about it, I'm probably going to at least look it up.
Yeah.
And so I heard about this as like a de-stressor, and for me, PM routine has become very important for me. Easing my way into sleep, and my sleep has gone to another level where it's like I hit the pillow, I'm out, and I wake up right at my alarm, and I'm good to go. So for me, it was creating an evening routine going into bed, and that has been part of it for sure. So my evening routine is normally do all of my, brush my teeth, floss, all that type of stuff every night, get ready for bed, and then it's read for about 30 minutes to an hour in bed, and then I go down to my mat and spend like 5 to 10 minutes just deep breathing, thinking, and then I have a one line a day journal, which is my favorite thing in the world. Mm-hmm. It's a 5-year long journal. In my 5th year, I've done it every day for 5 years, which is insane to think. It is, every page is a day, and every page has, so you're like, the first section would be like 2018, and then the next year when you come around to that page, it's 2019 of February, whatever. And so then you get to see what you wrote the year before, and you know you're going to get to see it the next year. It's incredible. I mean, I now have 4 years back of looking.
You've seen how much smarter you've gotten. Long
I see
up.
That. I see stupid relationship fights. I see great days of working out. And with the most interesting thing about that journal and why it's been amazing for my PM routine was about 2.5-3 years ago, I sign off every single day with the best day ever. And it's there. I can just see the shift of when I stopped and when I started doing that. and how my life has just gone to another level of just
complain less.
Yeah. And so that for me, it's like easing into bed is really important. And then one time throughout the day, if you ever take a Barry's class of mine, I always preach at the end where we just do like 2 minutes of breathing before the cool down, because I'm like, if you can just breathe and be conscious of that for literally 2 minutes, then your day is just going to be that much better.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing. It really is all about mindfulness. Like one of my favorite quotes is, a belief is a thought you keep thinking. And so that reminded me of what you said, have the best day ever. You're continually putting that in your mind, and it eventually becomes a part of your subconscious. And that's how you live.
It's a mantra. It's a mantra.
It's an email sign off.
It's in your brain.
It's a hashtag.
Everything.
Yeah. And it's funny because I started doing that at Walgreens. I changed my email signature to have the best day ever.
Yeah,
and my boss was like,
these are great.
My boss almost was like, is this a joke? Like, are you trying to insult? And I go, this is when I need to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, my coworkers are just being condescending.
They're like, is this a joke? And I go, no, like, this is a real thing. And I'm like, now I need to be around different people for sure.
So sad, but I can so see that.
Yeah,
until
it becomes ingrained in your persona. Like, still, when I meet somebody and we always sign off our podcast and have the best day ever, everyone laughs and they chuckle. But then, like 2 weeks later, and you're like,
best
email, best ever. It's like it's a thing. Yeah. So it just has to become part of you for sure.
Very cool. Well, how about you, Jason? Do you have any daily practices?
I feel like I always try and get into them. I have a really hard time building routine in my life, and I also don't really love it.
Mm-hmm.
I get complacent really fast. I get bored with things really fast. It's like, this injury is probably a nice little non-subtle way of saying slow down. I kind of batch routine activities. So it's almost like I have a routine like every Tuesday, because the way the day is structured totally determines the way that I feel and what I'm doing. And now that I'm, you know, probably too aware, hyper aware of my health and just like super in tune with my body and my mind and my energy, that I kind of know what it needs at different times, and I know what's going to put it into a tailspin. So we have projects coming up. I know that I'm going to be up all night and then up again at 5 a.m. to train. I know that the next day I'm going to need to do more like kind of easy wellness activities. So I'll know, okay, my routine for coming back off of like a work bender is going to be taking time to like cook myself a meal instead of just like grabbing something quick that I like pre-prepped and taking more time with that and like getting a kombucha I love and just sitting down and relaxing. Whereas normally I just eat to live. It's just on the go. Mm-hmm. I won't really think about it. If I know that my sleep, I'm going to have trouble sleeping, it's like cold shower, foam roller. I love Four Sigmatics Reishi tea, just like calms my mind down super quick. But every day, if I had to choose kind of like different categories of things that I'd say I routinely do every day, some type of movement, always some type of like thought practice, whether that's just writing or reading or meditation, I'll sneak something like that in, and then something social or community oriented. So sometimes I can batch those. Maybe it's like Brett and I have a long discussion, or I go and take a Barry's class and hang out and talk to people after, or I'll call a friend that likes talking on the phone for a while and just like bring up something random to have a discussion. But something movement, something thought, and something social every day. But depending on like the day or my energy or schedule, those things change.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that. And I like when you talked about like every Monday, maybe will be your prepping Monday. And then Tuesdays will be about, you know, conversations with others or podcasts or something like that. That's kind of similar to how I structure my week. It's like every single day of the week has a different focus, or maybe two different focuses.
Yeah.
So I look forward to it.
It's great. Yeah. They're nice little things, so I don't get bored of doing it, or I don't do it out of what I think is like some type of necessity. I don't want it to be an obligation, like, oh, I forgot to do this. It's like the one line a day, Brett's been doing that for so long that now that's just like, he just does it. But for me, something like that, like I had been doing it this year, but I find myself like forcing myself to do it almost. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing it. I've been keeping a journal because of my injury, just about thoughts and feelings and how I'm doing and kind of assessing my mental state, because I wanted to be able to look back on that and share more of that journey with clients and just sort of be able to talk about it. And I've really enjoyed doing that, but that's like pretty much the only thing I can manage to do on a daily basis that's the same.
Yeah. How are you guys doing with sleep? Because I know you guys used to at least not sleep a lot.
And I'm
like,
suck at it.
I have energy. I'm so confused.
I suck at it. I'm forcing Maddox, Rishi, making sure my room is super cold. Phones and like TVs and stuff like that don't really keep me up, but I mean, it's more what my mind was doing before I thought about bed than it is actually about my routine. If it's, again, if I'm on like a work bender and I've been caffeinated for too long, like a Rishi tea to calm it down and to do something like relaxing is great. But I know that if I haven't worked out, to make me a little bit more tired when I'm going to sleep, and if I've been doing something that's getting my mind kind of hyperactive, I know I just need to step away from like all work, all stimulation, and just kind of like sit somewhere for a while. I have a really hard time getting on a good sleep schedule. I don't know about you, but I don't see
it. I sleep very well. I think, again, though, like one of my mantras about life is just quality over quantity. Mm-hmm. And I think that can apply to sleep. But now I take a step back saying that because some people don't sleep a lot, but they also don't sleep well. And that's when you're going downhill. Mm-hmm. I personally like to say live more, sleep less. If you can create a healthy environment for your body, you don't need to sleep as much. Sleep is the natural time for our body to detoxify. When you drink a lot, you want to sleep the next day because your body needs to let all that out. When you're hungover, what do? You go to brunch, you take a nap. You go to bed early and you feel like crap. So that's an extreme example. Now, we're putting stresses on our body throughout the entire day, whether it's living in a city, breathing in fumes, or it is eating something that's not perfect. You're putting stress on your body. Stress on your body then needs to detoxify, and that's what sleep is. It's a reset every single day. That's why when you wake up in the morning, you have to go to the bathroom because your body's like, get this stuff out of me. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't put as much toxicity into your body, and that includes your environment, that includes your interactions with people, everything, not just food, not just alcohol, not just how much water you drink, but everything, you can sleep less. It's just, that's the way it is. So I personally do still sleep about 7 to 7.5 hours. Now, that changed because I used to be training way earlier in the morning, and that was kind of when I was in my grind phase, trying to get the better up and running. I use an app to track my sleep, and if I can get, 6.5 to 7.5 hours, I'm golden. Like, I am great. And then for me, it's the wind down before I go to sleep to make sure I don't just jump into bed. I see that with a lot of my clients and people I interact with, is they don't wind down. And then your mind is just spinning and your phone's on, and phone is on airplane mode at 9:30 for me pretty much every single night unless we're working late. Sometimes I'll wake up to text from Jake.
I get a lot of non-responses.
Yeah, it gets a lot of non-responses because I think airplane mode is an amazing tool. If you're doing something, put your phone on airplane mode. No one can hit you up. So for me, sleeping, that's a big thing. Creating an environment to sleep, I think making sure that your room is literally set up to sleep well. Some people don't think about this. They just want like a cool comforter and a nice bedspread and some shades. Like, you need to set yourself up. So for Jason, if it's cooling the room down, trying to see what helps you sleep better. Mine is completely black curtains, making sure my humidity level in my room is high. I'm checking a bunch of different things to see, is this environment set up for me to sleep well? And I assess everything like that. I think you need to understand that being awake and being sleeping are two different parts of the day, and you need to attack them in a way in which you're optimizing that time spent. If you like to work out and if you just did left arm bicep curls for an hour, that's not as good of a workout as if you do a full body workout. So it's the same thing with sleeping. It's like you need to make sure that your bed is set up. So I have a couple other like hacks. I use a grounding mat, which is something that reduces like EMFs around your body, which is another reason I turn my phone off airplane mode. There's a lot of chaos going on that we don't see around us. I have a bunch of plants in my apartment, so that's bringing some like life energy into the place. I use a diffuser in my room with a couple different essential oils.
The diffuser is a game changer.
Mm-hmm. Blackout curtains, completely black. I like very silent. And then just making sure that like the temperature, yeah, I keep temperature like 67 degrees, 68 degrees, nice and cool. And then just making sure that I did that pre-bed routine. So it's like there's thought that goes into it. And I think when we talked about what you asked, like what Live Better's mission is, it's this continued upgrade. So try something. Try it for 2 weeks. Do you sleep better? Great. Keep doing it. Not. Try something else. And always think this can get better. It's still not done for me. Like there's still things I'm thinking, like sometimes I'll wake up and I'll try, like, what did I do last night? Oh, I went to bed 30 minutes later, so now I'm going to go to bed 30 minutes earlier. Or I didn't do my porcupine mat before I went to bed, and I noticed a difference in my sleep. So it's like, okay, is this something that is changing? Is there a test and result? People don't do that. Like Tim Ferriss, the ultimate person to track things. Journal, track. He's tracking. Jason's tracking his, how's his legs doing? You need to track things or you have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing that people can do a lot better in seeing what the cause and effect is.
Yeah, I love all those tips. So much good information. And I know I personally don't have blackout curtains. I really want to get them, but I use an eye mask,
yeah.
And that helps
it's
so much.
It's just creating the same type of
exactly, yeah.
And people thrive off different things. So I think the number one thing is you don't have to go out and do everything that you and I are doing. Some people like a little bit of light coming through. Some people like a humidifier on or a sound machine. And it's great if that works
if
for you.
Get
just
up,
try it.
And you have a ton of energy and you feel good, keep doing it.
Yeah, that's about anything.
I did see, and the sleep thing has always been tough for me to solve because I do my best work between midnight and 5 a.m.
Mm.
And I love being up late, and I also love being up early. So I'd rather just, you know, I feel like I'd flourish off of more of a polyphasic sleep. I just am not great at napping. I love napping, but if I could sleep for like 5 hours at night, take like a 3 hour nap in the middle of the day, like that is money for me. Just our schedule doesn't really allow that too much. But I know that I kind of like also batch my sleep. I kind of just go, and then crash and reboot. And my sleep's like pretty good for a while, and then I'll start to play with a little more leash, and then eventually it just kind of yanks me back and is like, hey, you need to go to bed.
But then that's just a perfect example of like, you understand when you're doing,
yeah.
You get it, you just need to do it. And we all have things that we can do better. And so that's an example of something that Jason needs to work on, and he's doing it, and he's like going at it. No one's perfect, and we all, even if you're the best at something, you can still be better at it. And that's something that we just need to recognize for sure.
Live better.
There you go.
I love how passionate you guys are, and you are both so knowledgeable. I would love to hear from each of you what you feel like your greatest strength is. And I hate the word weakness, so something that you guys want to improve on.
That's good. Strength in regards to...
anything. It could be...
anything.
I'm thinking more so personality,
okay.
Like your characteristics.
Yeah, I think my strength is my... just my willingness to like listen and then be able to assess and in a very short amount of time spit back some knowledge. I love listening and I love hearing what people have to say. A lot of what Jason and I do as trainers is the knowledge of the training is vital, but to get somebody to hit a goal, it's about their mindset. And so I think changing people's mindset and really invigorating people with a passion to pursue their dream. I guess like that is it. And the reason is because we've done it. And we saw in our last retreat, we had one of our retreat goers a month after the retreat quit a job that he'd been working for 10 years
mm-hmm.
and started a new career because he came on the retreat with that intention and we gave him the tools, but also gave him like, you know, the mindset to say, this is something you can do. And I think if there's anything that I can spread to people, it's that you can do if it's your passion, you can do it, and I'll help you get there. That's like what I love.
You heard Brett say, if I could answer for you, I would say that combined with your ability to just like hit the gas pedal
yeah.
and not lay off, like just is more willingness to just like do work continually of anyone I know.
Yeah.
Just like over and over. And that also includes just like telling you what you need to do over and over and over until you do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. You do your strength, I don't think about my weakness.
I want a good one.
So many weaknesses.
Yeah, too many.
I would say my biggest strength, maybe my like EQ, my social awareness of like how people are feeling, what they're motivated by, and then piecing those together. So we've got a lot of different moving parts to Live Better. We've got a lot of different like brands we're working with and people and initiatives and things we need to focus on. I feel like I can zoom out and see how all those fit together from a very high level and be like, hey, here's what should be our priority because this is going to lead to this, this, and this. And then being able to like assess how those puzzle pieces are kind of like constantly moving, keep a lot of that in perspective at once, including just like being in a room full of people and understanding like how people's emotions are changing. And that's helpful when we've got a yoga class and energies are changing, or when we're in a coaching session with multiple people at the same time or people are listening to us speak. Just being able to, as Brett kind of said, what part of his strength is understanding what people are saying, but also how they're feeling, and then taking into account like what they're motivated by is really helpful, and being able to then teach them back or say information back or the way we prioritize on projects. So
that's awesome about you. I think one thing, and this is probably my biggest weakness, and I don't care about using that term from a business perspective, but it's also one of Jason's biggest strengths, and that's where we work very well together, is like he said, I will go ham at anything you put.
Yeah, this is actually a perfect question because it complements exactly
but
how well we
my,
work together.
I am not, and it's not that I'm not like trying hard, but my detail-oriented skill set is not there.
Mm.
So you tell me to paint 1,000 pictures, I'll paint 1,000. But they might not all be in the lines. I might not color in the lines, but I'll be the first one to finish, and I'll go hard as I can. But for example, if there is any important email that needs to be sent out, I will write it, and Jason, dude, you sound like you are literally yelling at someone. I love it, but you spelled like "they're" wrong like 6 times. And so he'll be like, he's the detail-oriented guy, and it's perfect. I'll be like, Jason, I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna crush it. But can you read it so that it makes sense? Or I'm editing this thing, and like, would you mind looking it over? So for me, it's like sometimes, and I need to take a step back assess, and like what he just said, like assess everything and just making sure that the details are there. And that's, it's a really hard thing for me to do.
What's
good is that it's like, it doesn't, if I was running the Better by myself, Wake Up Wednesdays would have hell of mistakes in them, but they don't because he's there at proofread. So it's almost like, it's kind of a good thing because I'll keep pushing things.
Yeah.
And I'll keep being like, we need to do this, we need to do this, we got to try this. And then I'll start doing it. And then Jason's like, oh, you're doing this. Like, that's tight. He's like, I want to do that. We do it together. And then I'm like, oh, but you're doing it way better than me. So then it's like, we just start like weaving that in together. And it works like symbiotically very well.
That's my weakness, is that my motivation to do certain things, just like I batch my routines and days together, I also batch my work together. And if I don't feel like doing something, I just won't do it. If you need to listen to the podcast or watch the TED Talk with Tim Urban about procrastination, because it is so funny. I can't remember what he calls it. He's got this little like ADHD monkey in his head. Like, I will rabbit hole, normally just work out myself or read books or listen to things. And I batch my motivation into getting work done. So like Brett has his day-to-day discipline on like, here's my list of things to do. Gas pedal hits the floor. We're doing it. He does that every day. I can't do that, but I need 2 hours of quality time and I can get a week's worth of work done. But I need somebody to be like, hey dude, there's a deadline. You need to be doing this. You need to be talking to this. So like Brett will push things forward. I'll edit, review, give him notes, and he'll continue to push it forward while I'm like zooming out and doing other things. So I have like the design and the detail orientation. Brett has the like task orientation for sure to get things done, but like that's my weakness. So things that I have personally like I might put off reading an email for 3 weeks. I'll write you a perfect response. It's coming 3 weeks later. It's funny, my mom literally just texted me a quote today. She said, I gotta look it up. But along the lines of like, long-term consistency is better than short-term intensity. And that's the way it is for me. Like, it just takes me longer to do that. She said, continuous improvement is better than delayed perfection. And that is like perfect to us, because Brett is always continuously improving. But I'm looking for like one perfect thing to say, one perfect deliverable, like the perfect way. And then it takes into like, my strength plays against me because it says, okay, well, this person might be thinking this and they're gonna be feeling like this when we teach them that. So maybe we should move this song here. It's like, just start doing it and we'll figure it out. And that is maybe our best strength together, is being able to walk in and rip anything.
Yeah.
Put us in front of 1,000 people, you want to come up with a workout on the spot, done.
Yeah, we do that all the time.
I love that. What is the greatest challenge then with working together as best friends?
I think it's just scheduling, to be honest, because we have things that we do personally. Brett is married, not yet, but we each have our own training, we each teach our own classes, and then we have Live Better, and it's 100% of our time is not focused on Live Better. So it's just kind of like, the biggest challenge is like finding open times to get things done. Projects have definitely been delayed because like Brett was on his honeymoon, and then I did this, and then Brett broke his collarbone, and then I tore my hamstring, and it's just like, when you rely on doing everything as a duo, you suffer from having to have both of you be on the same page. And it's not to say that things don't get done the way we want to do them, just not always on the timeline. So you get the benefit of doing things alone is once you make a decision, you just do it because it's only you. But then you don't get that peer edit. You don't get the second voice. You don't get the sounding board. So it's definitely been way better than it's ever caused any challenge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say scheduling is tough. We don't have an office, so we're always bouncing around. We take a lot of calls on a divvy with headphones on.
Do you guys eventually want to have Live Better be your 100% full-time job/lifestyle, or do you like doing a bunch of things at once?
That's a just not necessarily like a complicated question, but what allows Live Better to be so powerful is that we do different things.
Yeah.
And while like the main sort of like driver is Live Better, doing other things tangentially drives Live Better forward, and maybe in an exponential way more so than we could have done if we were just pumping Live Better all the time. So I don't have a great answer to that question.
Because it's an interesting thing. It's like our personal training time is education on when we do a retreat. We like have worked with 500 different people, and we've seen how they've moved. And so instead of just like reading a textbook or something, and that's not technically Live Better, I think right now Live Better is our full-time gig, but we just have like 5 full-time gigs. We're able to do that. But it's an interesting question. It's something we talk about a lot. It's like, should we give everything else up and go at it? And that's just like I think it's something we always are considering and thinking about, but right now it's working in the way we want it to.
Mm-hmm.
So we're cool with having a couple other things going on.
Totally. Let's talk about Live Better Retreats. I love what your website says, and I actually want to read it. Live Better Retreats have one mission: bring together cool people doing cool things around the world to expand our perspective, find our passion, and live the best life ever. The retreats focus on all things wellness: physical, mental, social, and spiritual. It's combining the benefits of fitness, nutrition, sleep management, stress-reducing techniques, creativity sparks, and flow states to achieve your full potential. Surf, yoga, think, write, drink, laugh, reset, and create. AKA all the things. I'm like, okay.
So that's
the thing.
Wrote that at 2:30 a.m.
Yeah, that's great.
I was vibing. Probably just drank coffee at 10:15.
I love that. One of my favorite things you guys said is expand our perspective. How has your perspective been challenged or changed lately?
Injury.
For both of us.
Ripped my hamstring off the bone, changed the course of this year 180 degrees. I also realized how much I rely on my body for happiness to get from point A to point B. It's not that I ever took it for granted. It's that I just realized my life was literally planned out in 15-minute increments. Yeah. It was like, where could I come from here to make this podcast? It was like, now I have to think about, I have to get an Uber, and it has to be take longer because I can't drive myself. I am not focused on running my fastest 5K ever. I can't train for a marathon. I can't work on a handstand yet. So all these very physical goals I have now turned into different ones. And the perspective that, I mean, being a health coach and being a trainer and preaching the fact that like your body is your life, I'm now even more focused on the fact that like your mind is the real playground or prison. It's different. And the perspective that the body is the driver for the mind is now challenged a little bit, though I'm still continuing to work out. But I had to take a step back and say, all right, mind, now you have to go back and will the body in a very different direction than you were taking it. And that perspective to me, it was a big shift. Because like I've had friends and family that have dealt with all clients that have dealt with all types of issues, whether it's like hyperactive or depression or anxiety, or there's been Alzheimer's in my family, and I've watched what movement has either done to help or done to hurt those mental conditions. And I'm always like, well, just get moving. Just go out for a run. Just go out and do this. Just go start working hard. But there's a mental block to that if that's not a habit. And for me, I had to reteach myself the habit. I couldn't move my leg for like 3 weeks until pre and then post surgery. So that's been my biggest perspective.
So, 6 months prior to Jason tearing his hamstring off, I shattered my collarbone like right before or a little bit before our retreat we went on.
PT loves us.
Yeah. Physical therapist loves us. Shout out to Performance in Motion. Awesome. So we were giving a corporate retreat, and it was the day after we gave like a really good talk to the group. We're mountain biking in Whistler, and it was epic, and we'd done this run once before, and so I was like, I'm gonna push it. And I essentially, God willingly, did dive, falling off the edge of a cliff. Probably fell about from the bike to the ground was maybe like 7 or 8 feet, which is a pretty large fall directly onto my collarbone. Jason was the bike ahead of me, so he didn't know it was happening, and so I unblack out. It was literally like in a war movie when a bomb goes off, and it's like that crazy vibration. Like that's actually what happens when this happens. And I unblack out, and I'm like, oh gosh, I try to raise my left arm, it's not going anywhere. So I feel my arm. Okay, that's not connected anymore. Some guy comes down, takes me to the hospital, and I was on a, you know, 7 month, 6.5 month journey back to, now I'm back at 100%, which is great. But I was 5 weeks in a sling, not being able to move my arm, not being able to do any activity. It took me about 4 weeks to be able to just get on a recumbent bike. And for someone like Jason and I, that's literally, I divvy to every single thing. I ride my bike to every single thing throughout the day. It's like, can't even move. And so that was really hard. Couldn't work out, couldn't lift weights. And like, that's how I relieve my stress. I was having a conversation with my wife around this earlier. It was like, how do I relieve stress? And it's through movement and working out. And I couldn't do that. So that was really challenging. But again, it just came back down to being like, how am I going to use this to better myself? What am I going to do? How am I going to learn how my body works? And I learned so much about the shoulder and about how it plays into everything. Now I just like, I'm like so much more knowledgeable about it. I'm way stronger than I ever was in my shoulders. My handstand is better. And it was just like something that was very humbling, but also a really good tool now because, you know, people kind of joke and challenge that best day ever mindset, but it's like, once you've gone through something where some people would go down a very bad path after that, it's just like, let's kick it and let's crush it. Mm-hmm. And it's been a blessing in disguise for sure.
And I remember you recovered so much faster than what they originally said.
Yeah, my doctor said like 6 months, you will be back. And I was back in about 3.5, 4. Handstands, lifting, running. It definitely took some time to get back to like very strong lifts, but very, very, came back very fast, and that had to do with mindset one, like Jason mentioned. But then talking about routine and planning was, how do I shift my routine? And it was my supplement regimen. It was my sleep, sleeping way more than I did, because I knew that, we're talking about detoxification, your body needs time to recover. It needs more when there's something broken in it to heal. It needs more time. So it was upping that. It was reducing other stresses. It was a lot of silent meditation, sitting because I couldn't do yoga. So it was just shifting things. But you have the toolkit, and you just assess where you're at. It's a new baseline, and you have an opportunity to get better.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you a question, actually. This was on our podcast last week. I was talking a little bit about activated charcoal, and I was like, I know a guy who knows a lot about activated charcoal, because we were like talking about it, and I'm like, I don't really know. I'll ask him.
Yeah.
What is your favorite benefits of activated charcoal? I know you were talking about how you use it on the plane.
Yep.
So just...
So activated charcoal is one of the top ways to like acutely detoxify the body very fast. And being on a plane, for example, you are one at a very high altitude, which our body is not meant to be up that high off the ground. You're also breathing in a bunch of recycled air. You're also probably just like ate some crappy food on the plane. Someone's sneezing on the plane. There's a young child that's sick on the plane. So you're in this kind of like capsule of sickness. So I use activated charcoal as a top detoxifier always when I travel, before and after I'm on the flight. It's a really good way. So essentially, like, gunk builds up in your body. That activated charcoal will bind to that and pass it through you. You think of like a car as an example. Every once in a while you need to kind of flush it out, and then it's reset and ready to rock. And so that's what activated charcoal does. You can use it in lemonades, you can take pills, you can do a lot with it. You can use it to brush your teeth. There's a bunch of toothpaste that have it in there. There's a lot of ways to get it in, and you can use it as much or as less as you want. There's two sides of the coin. Some people think it robs some nutrients from your body, so you shouldn't use it too much, but then there's studies saying that that's not true. Mm-hmm. So that's another one where you just have to try it out for yourself. I definitely use it when I'm traveling a lot. So this month, for example, I'll be traveling almost every week, so I will definitely be upping the amount of activated charcoal that I'm using.
Cool. Good to know. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, before we end, I want to ask you just couple quick questions on your four aspects of wellness that you mentioned, which is physical, mental, social, and spiritual. So first one, physical. There is so much noise, as you guys know, about how you should work out, how you should eat. What do you think is important advice that people are not following?
For me, physical, from a working out perspective, is it's more about how you feel, less about how you look. We see that in today's culture through, when we're talking about how we use Instagram as a good thing to gain all these advices, it can also be a vice, because you see people that are just ungodly strong or skinny and they're not healthy. They're doing things to get their body to that state that is not good for you. So I think it's removing that pressure of how you look and think about how you feel and how you move.
Are you a good mover? Like,
train for movement, not for look.
Yeah.
If you train the right way with movement, and then you combine the other aspects of wellness we'll get into in a second, that's when you feel good, that's when you look good. It's a byproduct.
What is your number one stress-reducing technique in terms of mental?
Yeah, for me, it's getting back to movement, and it's specifically yoga.
Okay.
I use yoga. I'm so keened in and focused throughout a class that I blink and it goes by. I'm in Shavasana and I'm out. And it's like 1 hour where it's just like me, my mat, my time to just think and flow and feel really good.
Mine is getting into or looking at water, for sure. Going for a swim, going down to the beach. I don't live far from the lake at all. The river is right behind where I live. I can take a shower. Anything where I can be in or around water. Like, one of the number one stress reducers is just looking at moving water. That's why fountains make you feel so peaceful. By watching the ocean makes you feel so calm. I don't have an ocean out my back door, but a pretty big lake, just to feel calm is just a nice setting. So.
Mm-hmm. Do you just look at it, or are you thinking about anything while you're in water?
I think it just gives me better... When I'm swimming, that is like the ultimate clarity for me. Surfing is my single favorite stress-reducing activity. It's why I love it. It's why it works on a retreat, because it's so fun. It makes you so present. And I think just being in water takes a human being out of their normal element, and it causes you to be. Otherwise, you'll drown. It makes you focus on your breathing. It makes you do things that you would otherwise have to actively try to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, surfing was so much fun.
You crushed it. You were up on this, rolling on it.
Slaying
it. Yeah, I was like, damn, she's not out there. She's killing it.
Oh, I still remember the guy who was helping us. He was like, the water is alive. It feels your energy.
It is. The energy of the ocean, the energy of the board. It feels magical. You are present, or it will flip you over and slap you, as I found out.
What does social wellness mean to you?
I think one of the big things and what we get from our retreat, and you can use social media this way too if you choose, is I always say that you are a product of, and this is a Tim Ferriss thing too, of the five people you spend the most time with. And I forget where I was a couple of days ago, but someone asked, like, what's your best piece of advice? And that's it. Surround yourself with five individuals on a daily or weekly basis that make you better. So I think you, and like we talked about this earlier, is like you create your community. And we're all subject of who we spend the most time with. If I spend more time with Jason, I'm going to work out more. It's just the way it is. We're always talking about it. Like, we're like, oh, let's do this meeting while we're working out. If I spend time with somebody that is not doing things I want to do, you'll start to creep in. You'll start to do or think you will do that. Be very mentally strong to not succumb to your surroundings. And so I think when we look at social, like, it's creating a community around yourself that's better than you, that is stronger than you, and that is going to support you, and being active to do that. You choose it. You go to Barry's bootcamp class. You are in a room where 60 other people are going as hard as they can. There is no doubt if you walked into that class and you walked on the treadmill, you will run faster than if you were there by yourself. 100% no doubt. And so you created that for yourself. You walked in the door, you came in, you signed up, you made it there. So it was your choice to get better and surround yourself by a group that's a better group.
That's like-minded people. And if you can't find all like-minded people, say, here's like the setback to that. Like, what if I work in a corporate environment? It's being able to say no in a social setting and finding social support. It's the number one indicator for whether you will stick to something or not. So as Brett said, if you're surrounded by people who are eating pizza and drinking all the time, that is what you will do, because there's an external pressure to do it, and you're going to have to be the person that says, I don't really want that. I'm going to opt out and eat this. And that kind of chips away at you. So the social support thing, if you're trying to change your nutrition, your significant other or your roommates have to be on board for it, or they at least have to vocalize their support for your goals. Otherwise, no chance.
Mm-hmm. That is huge. What is your greatest lesson on spirituality?
I think it's pretty cool that everyone is connected. Like, there, whatever religion you believe in, whatever, if meditation's it, if yoga's it, if movement's it, if you go to church, it doesn't really matter, but you're kind of all bound by, like, similar things happening to you. You find similar things funny in opposite parts of the world. You can connect with somebody that lives in a totally different area of the world that speaks a different language than you without really having to say or do too much. And something in that there has to be some like common thread between humans, and maybe it's just the way we process emotions. I don't really know, but like that's kind of spiritual to me, when people can do things like together, or you can find a common bond with somebody you've never met. Those types of things, it's almost like the emotional piece of it is spiritual, because you're moved. That's why people cry in Soul Cycle classes. That doesn't make any sense why that happens. It doesn't make sense why people throw their hands up in church and start crying because they're overwhelmed by it. It's more that the people around them are giving this sense of like of community, of common purpose. That's why groups work well. That's why sports teams feud with each other, even though we live down the street or in the same household. Those things like don't make rational sense, but that piece of like spirituality that we're all in this, we're like striving towards the same types of things, we're affected by the same types of things, and we can also connect over the same types of things. Like, those moments for me are spiritual, when something like that happens, when I feel like moved for another reason other than like I'm just trying to make money or we're doing a business deal. It's just a nice like human interaction.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Amen. Two more questions for you guys. I have to ask about relationships, of course.
Shoot.
I want to hear from a guy's perspective. What is your number one relationship advice?
You're the married man.
Yeah, I think there's been a couple interesting things. There's two pieces. There's a really good book called The Five Love Languages, which I would recommend everybody read, regardless if you're in a relationship or not. It teaches you what you need from a partner and what a partner would need from you. And there's five different love languages, and they're like different things. There's like physical touch, there's emotional need, there is like getting gifts, there's like all these different things. And once you read it, you're like, oh, that makes sense. Like, I feel loved when this happens to me, but my partner might feel loved when something completely opposite happens to her. So once you learn what they need, then you can start giving that energy to them. So for example, like if you love like receiving, or you love like one of the ones is like when like your partner like does things for you, like will make you dinner and have the house clean and stuff like that. And it seems simple. If that's something that you love, you come home and they like put this dinner cloth out and made a nice table, you feel amazing. But if that's not what you feel loved by, they do that. They might think that they're professing their love to you, but you're like, oh, this is nice. But this isn't like what really makes me feel good. Once you start to learn your other person's love language, it's a hard thing. And my wife and I read that book on our honeymoon, actually. Mm. And since then, it's been like, it's been amazing, like, and talking about continuing to progress, for sure. And then I also think setting up time, either with your significant other, or, and this term gets, like, it's like a negative thing, but like going to therapy. I think you don't need to have an issue, and it sucks that the word therapy is used, like, once you get hurt, you go to therapy.
Yeah.
But it's not the way it is. It's like Jason and I preach from a movement perspective. It's like prehab. It's like do something. Like I was doing a lot of shoulder work before I hurt my shoulder. That's why I came back a lot faster. So going to see somebody or setting up time. My wife and I will set up time to talk with each other about nothing. Not like we have a problem. Let's just like talk about getting ahead of things. People don't do that. And then it's like a cascading effect. And then it's like you didn't take out the trash and all hell breaks loose over one stupid thing. That should never happen. You should be talking about that, whether it's with somebody or by yourself, and don't think of that as a negative or think of that as an issue. Just think of it as like, we're gonna go team build and we're gonna go work together and try to talk things out and get ahead of this and build. I think those two things for me have been huge.
I love both of those points. I would say for me, if I gave a different answer, is that your significant other, when it's time to make that decision that like they're it, that they are the number one person in your life. Like, they're your teammate. They are not like your side piece. They are not, you just come home and this is your home life and this is that. Like, that's your person. So then it's weird as you start to develop such a strong relationship as like the honeymoon phase goes away and you are presented with like life, with challenges and issues that they are they're your number one support and they are your number one focus. Because if they're not, even ahead of your parents, your siblings, like you have now chosen to build a life around that person because they're the ones that are there every day. Your parents are no longer you cooking you breakfast. They're not doing your laundry. The person that's around you supporting you when you get a really bad injury. Like Brett couldn't have gotten through his days without Sarah. There's no way. I couldn't put my socks on myself for like the first week. Asking somebody to like put your socks on and like help you move around and just do the most seemingly meaningless tasks over and over without a complaint. That's when you know, for sure. But even backing off from that, it's just like understanding that you need to give time and you need to make time for that person. It needs to be scheduled. If you're not good at it, it's not a bad thing to like put a date in a Google Calendar.
Do whatever it is.
That's okay. It's not a bad time to like put some thoughts down on paper, like, hey, here's what I'm gonna strive. Like, put some relationship goals down. People think that stuff like that you just need to figure out. You don't. You can learn like that the same way you learn about your health, the same way you learn about your finances. You can learn about your relationships.
That's so great. Last question. What does being hashtag in charge mean to you in one word?
It's on you. It's on you.
Why is it on me?
No, I was just, that's what I was saying. Oh. I wish that was one word, on you. I know, I know that's two words. But it's kind of like, can we just hyphenate it? Make it one word, it's on you. Two words.
One word. I would say my one word is proactive.
Yeah. I think my in charge, discipline. Your motivation will be fleeting. Your discipline will stay with you and stuff. That's I did. Discipline.
Yeah,
I was just explaining my answer. One word. What are you being proactive about?
That's it. She only asked one word.
You guys are the best.
Discipline.
Well, how can people learn more about you? Wake Up Wednesday, how do they subscribe to that?
Our website is livebetterco.org. All of our information is on there. Our Instagram handle is livebetterco as well. And then if you search Brett Gornick or Jason Lobig, you'll find us on Instagram as well. It's probably Instagram and our website is our best way to
come
reach
take
out.
Class. You can sign up for the email on our website or just DM us on Instagram and we'll put you on it.
Yeah.
Yay. And then when is your next retreat? Have you guys set that up yet?
Yeah, our next retreat is in the end of March. So it's
coming up quick.
But we're going to have a couple more this year as well. And it's going to be our thing going forward. So if you can't make that one, just shoot us a DM or an email or hit us up on our website and we'll get you information about the next one.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. This was so much fun. Please rate and review the podcast and let us know what you think about the Live Better Boys. Bye guys. Love you.
Hey, Charge Girls. Good morning. Yes, I'm talking to you. It's time to get charged up, cause this day is anew. The sky says hi and it's bluer than blue. The sun is shining and all the birds are chirping too. Today is the best day to be alive. The miracles appear once you open up your eyes. Surprise! Time to keep living your dreams. So get up and join the rest of your charge team.